Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hello, hello there.
Hello, and we are joined this week by Glenn Haworth from Hellingwind's Axe and Tool. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely, man. Good to have you. I'm excited to chat. Got a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Sweet.
All right, Devin, before we do that, what do you got for us this evening?
All right, it's a long one, so get ready. Ladies and gentlemen, I've traveled over half our state here tonight. I couldn't get away sooner because my new well was coming in at Coyote Hills, and I had to see about it. That well is now floating at 2,000 barrels and is paying me an income of $5,000 a week. I have two other drilling and 16 producing antelope, so ladies and gentlemen, if I say I'm an oil man, you will agree. Now, you have a great chance here, but bear in mind you can lose it all if you're not careful. Out of all the men that beg for a chance to drill your lots, maybe 1 in 20 will be oilmen. The rest will be speculators. That's men trying to get between you and the oilmen to get some of the money that ought by rights come to you. Even if you find one that has money and means to drill, he maybe knows nothing about drilling. He'll have to hire out the job to a contract. Then you're depending on a contractor who will rush the job through so he can get another contract just as quick as he can. This is the way that this works. You guys know what that's from?
That sounds like There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Fantastic movie film. Fantastic movie film.
I love it. Good. It's one of my favorite. I've said it before, but Glenn, when I went to film school, There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men came out that same summer.
I was like, this is great.
These movies are awesome.
Ironically enough, when I was studying film, it was Fight Club and American Beauty.
Mm. Oh man, jeez!
Two classics,
right?
Wow. But we only get years. Those movies like every 10 years, and then maybe we get some more in another 10.
Yeah.
Okay. So just I don't know. I wanted to do There Will Be Blood quotes, but a lot of them are quick and like funny and Daniel like being obviously nasty towards other people. But I love that's like the intro scene, and he's obviously a great salesman. And he's charming and interesting and brutal, but he does the salesman thing where he does the trick of like pulling you in, letting you see behind the curtain, or at least he's saying he is. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, this is how things happen. And people are going to do this to try to screw you over, but I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Which pulls people right in. Now, how much of, or just general thoughts on that, but how much is like, how much are influencers, salesmen, that like, I don't think most are salesmen. I mean, you're selling yourself, but like, is there, how much trickery, everyone does their different amount of trickery. How much do you think is appropriate? Dust, we'll start with you.
Well, sorry. It's funny, you know, this is a conversation that we have kind of often, is the whole like, you know, Instagram and shadow banning, and what do you put on there, and how do you, you know, what do you depend on? Do we depend on Instagram? Do we depend on YouTube to make a living? And I think all of that is that like that salesmanship. Like, you have to be able to sell yourself in a way that's going to represent you the way you want to, but also follow the guidelines of the platform you're representing on. And also keep your own integrity. And there's like a fine balance there, because if everyone upheld their own integrity 100%, they may not make as much money, but obviously people who sell out, then they become sellouts, you know? So, you know, and it's like, do you completely pander to the platform you're on, or do you try to do what you're going to do because there's some integrity there? It's just, that's everyone's personal battle, I think, especially in this, you know, this world of social media and influencing and us like selling what we do and what we make through social media.
Yeah. Glenn, do you feel like you have to like sell yourself a little bit?
I think there's a layer of showmanship and a bit of pageantry, you know, that kind of goes into the presentation of work. You know, I think there's so many different aspects to social media and layers, right? Where there's so many people that aren't really selling much of anything, and they're just regurgitating content. Right. And views and followers matter in grand counts, where people like us, we look for a core group of people that attach themselves to what we're doing. They believe in the product. They believe in the personality behind the product. But if you don't sell a personality, they don't really know what they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people buy the personality, right? They buy an like individual maker's product who's selling whatever they're selling for much more than you're going to find it at any like, you know, hardware store or whatever.
Sure.
They're buying the personality, not the product. It's the story behind the product.
I think there's two sides to it though. You know, there's definitely a lot of like, and you see it a lot in the knife maker community, the very, very high end knife makers. You never see their face. You don't even see their hands. You just see this incredible piece of work and you want it. You don't care who made it. But then there's that kind of middle ground where you're trying to grow and develop. It gives the buyer an exposure to A, process, and B, the personality behind it. Some people really don't give a shit about who you are. They just want something good, and they want to pay for it, and they want it fast, they want it now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's layers to it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that people are, you know, the product, there's enough product out there now, especially with the kind of resurgence of tool making, axe making, you know, blacksmithing, knife making in the last 10, 15 years, you know, with the American, what is it, the knife, the knife guild, whatever, you know, it's like the master smiths and journeymen, like everyone is kind of striving in this direction now. And it's much more open in the world because social media is more open. People can see it. People know who you are. And there's this community there's the community within the community that the people who know what they're looking for are going to buy a master smith's knife because it says master smith on it, because that's what it is.
Right.
And there's people who would never even never even take a second glance at a knife that's over $100, because what's the point? It's just a knife,
sure.
You know? I think there's the niche community, but then as social media expands, that community gets bigger and bigger. So then now people are now having to sell themselves more because you have this new group of people coming in and they want these things, but they also want to know like who they're getting them from and why. And you know, when there's this like explosion of people getting more, you know, people going for their journeyman and people going for their master smith. All social media is pushing and people are getting into it more. I think that people are becoming more picky. And
it's a lot more exposure.
And then I think that's where the pageantry comes into play. It's like where now you need to sell yourself a little bit more. And we've talked about it with Adam Savage at one point said in his thing that like he always gives like 110% when he's on video because it's like, you know, you're acting a little bit more, you know? So again, it's the pageantry. You're selling yourself a little bit more than you would. You're just in a room with a person chatting.
If you're going to say, hey guys, this is blah, 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 this is my new axe or this is my new knife and this is how it works. You bump it up, whatever. 10 or 15%, whatever you think is normal. That extra is just to present. It's like musicians on stage. Like, yeah, you can wear something simple, but like, wear like the big hat and the vest, and then no one notices that it's extra until, you know, you're walking through a Walmart with it. And you're like, yeah, well, now this doesn't work.
But
on camera or on a stage, it definitely works.
Guilty. guilty, guilty, guilty. I do it all the time.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's half the fun is, I think, like you said, it's the pageantry. It's the half the fun of being out there and having, like, you know.
It's fun, though. It makes things really care, more entertaining.
We wouldn't show ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't care, you'd never see my face. You know, it's like.
Right.
But it's fun. I like it.
It's fun. I like it, too. I think there's aspects of the sharing and the video production that can get a little daunting, and sometimes you're just not in the mood for it. And you're like, here's my hands, here's this thing, look what I did, sorry. And then there's other times where you're stoked, you're excited, you want to throw a little bit more into it, and you know, you see the face, you see the expression, you see the background behind me, like you get to see the whole thing. And sometimes you talk about it, sometimes you don't, sometimes it's just music, sometimes you just make a music video surrounding the piece, you know, but it all kind of adds to the character of the presentation.
Right on. Yeah, for no, sure. I agree. I like the quote, because it kind of gives you that aspect of like, this is who we are. This is like the reality of the situation. This is a little bit of behind the scenes, but it's also, you know, there's a reality to social media that comes along, which I think is really, was really nice. And that's one of the things I think that I have, noticed more and more over the years. You know, being in the community and going to things like Maker Camp, where it's like, all these people are just normal people. You know, it's not like back in the day where you had movie stars and TV stars and people that were unattainable. You know, they live in like Hollywood. Mm-hmm. These are just everybody like around now becoming these like, you know, these known personalities, and they're just like normal dudes hanging out, making stuff in their own shop, which is, that's great.
That's the best part. It's a lot of fun. I mean, especially from like, speaking from my experience and perspective here, coming from that same dude who was staring at his phone, oogling over other people's work, to having people talk to me with like, sir, and thank you. I'm like, dude, calm down. Like, I'm just a dude in my garage trying to sort some shit out, man. Like,
at ease.
I don't need all that.
Right. I don't need all exactly. That. Yeah. I'd rather have the normal conversation.
Yeah.
On the fire, drinking a beer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Then exactly right.
People will do that to me. Then they realize I'm not Dustin. And then they who are you?
Like, oh, you're just the camera guy? All right.
You're just his brother. You look like him, but you don't make anything.
Just make me look pretty.
That's right. Someone's got to.
So we're talking to Glenn, Glenn Howarth from Howling Wolf Axe and Howling Wind, sorry, Howling Axe Winds. And Tool, and you call yourself a maker of sharp things, which I absolutely love. You know, been in the maker community, in the axe community, and in the kind of, you know, knife side of things and axe side of things and Maker Camp side of things. And kind of, we've been kind of in the same circles for a couple of years now. So yeah. Welcome, man. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. It's an honor to be here. Been listening for a long time.
Yeah. And we chatted at Maker Camp, and I was like, we were just having this cool conversation about like the history of, or like your history going into like making the handles and then working on the Revenant over the years. And we'll get a little bit more into that. But, you know, as we were just sitting there chatting about it, I could just tell there was like some depths there that I hadn't heard from you. Like I get, you know, we get the, like, the 1 minute reels and the, like, the little bits of like snippets here and there, paragraphs about what we're seeing, but they think there's some cool information there that is just not as like, it's not as topical. It's not on the top, that we don't see that from what your social media presents. So I thought it'd be a fun thing to chat with you about that and get the background.
I'd love to fire away.
So I just want to start with like, how did you get into like collecting and restoring and selling axes? Because like, I know that like a lot of what we see now from your channel is the Revenant, but also in the background of your shop are thousands of axes, right? So you've obviously been collecting and restoring just like regular axes for a long time. So how'd you get into all that?
Almost completely by accident. I'm new to the East Coast, so I've been in Connecticut now since 2016. Previously, we lived in the Santa Cruz Mountains in California.
Oh, right.
And redwood forests, sequoias, big tall trees. Mm. We had wood everywhere, cheap, shitty axes. And myself, my son, and my good friend just started throwing full-size axes for fun. And it was a blast. You know, like what people call axe throwing now, they're throwing hatchets. Right. But we were throwing full size, you know, three and a half pound axes from, I don't know, a couple paces. You know, it wasn't like a huge distance, but we were having a blast with it. And they all sucked. I'm like, how do I get a cooler axe? Like, I want a cooler axe. I didn't know anything about axes other than just throwing them at wood. And, you know, I started kind of looking around. I'm like, okay, those are cool. Those are cool. Figured out how to hang one. You break a couple handles throwing axes. And, you know, you start figuring out how to jam that piece of wood into the piece of metal. And, okay. But, you know, there was no, there was nothing creative about it. It was just get the axe fixed so I can throw it around some more.
Right. Yep.
And then I started getting into blacksmithing. Started forging. And... just little stuff, bottle openers, keychains, you know, nothing fancy. Forged a couple railroad spike knives, and I'm like, oh my God, this is fun. This is so much fun. I want to do this all the time. And I wanted more tools. I needed more tools. How do I afford more tools? Well, I got to make more stuff. And made a couple axes. Someone wanted one. Sold it for like $150. And
nice.
It turned into a thing. You post it. Someone else wanted one. Like, oh, that's cool. Could you do that for me? Yeah, sure. And it was all just an aspect to it. It was purely fueled by. Sorry, my computer just closed, so I'm hoping you can still hear me.
Yep, we still hear you.
Okay, good. It was all just driven to fuel the workshop. Buy more tools. Build a blacksmith shop. Start forging more. Start forging more. And then I got completely entrenched with the axes. Then I fell down the axe rabbit hole. I started finding local auctions. I started finding these heads, those heads, these heads, these are the shape, that pattern. And I fell in love. And I'm like, oh my God, I fucking love these things. I want all of them. I want all of them. And that's, you know, kind of where I got kind of bored after a while. I'm like, okay, cool. I can get the stick inside the metal. I can make them sharp. This is fun. This is cool, but I'm kind of bored. And then I started experimenting with modifying and reshaping them. And I'm like, well, they get really hot when I do that. Should probably figure out how to heat treat these things. And I figured out how to heat treat them. I was heat treating my first modifications. I'll just call them that because they weren't revenants in a coal forge.
Nice.
heat to non-magnetic and quench in oil. Like I was cowboy heat treat through and through. And okay, cool, it didn't break. Okay, cool, it skates a file. Good enough. And you know, I didn't sell them as anything more than that, you know, so that I was never misrepresenting anything, but could the heat treat have been better? Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. But I think the first what now would be considered a revenant shape. I sold back in 2017, and the dude is still using it.
Nice.
It manages to keep it sharp on his own, and it still does its job. It's still on the original handle, which was a California framing hammer that I flipped around backwards and hung like a reverse shoulder kind of thing. And it's still going strong. It's still going strong. So like, okay, can't be doing it that bad. And it evolved from there. It just evolved from there.
Nice. Wait, so the handle was a framing hammer hand, or the head was a
framing hammer? The handle was a framing hammer.
Gotcha.
Handle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Reshaped and flipped around. And that's when I started getting crazy with the faceted lines. I got completely obsessed with faceted handles, and it snowballed from there.
So it was when you started doing the revenants is when the like specialized custom faceted handles came into play at the same time?
100%. Yeah.
Okay. And was that because of like the lines? Like the lines were matching and it felt right?
That was it. Yeah. I was chasing a shape that I had never seen. You know, I loved that bearded lugged look, and there just wasn't much of anything out there. They weren't commercially available.
Right. Yeah.
And so I was like, ah, fuck it. No one else is going to sell them. I'm going to sell them. So I just started making them. And I haven't been able to stop. At three quarters of the axe was on the wall back there are Kelly Wood Slasher Michigans.
Right.
Because that's
destined for becoming their revenants.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to call him Grinder Fodder. Grinder Fodder, awesome. Revenant stock. That's what it was. I ended up having to buy them in lots. You know, I wasn't buying one or two here or there. I was buying 20 or 30 at a time.
Nice. So I have kind of a funny story. When we went to the first maker camp that I went to, which was 2021.
Or two.
Because 2019 was the very first one. 2020 was pandemic year. And 21, two, three, four. Yeah. That 21 was, yeah. I met you that year. I didn't know you then, but I know now that I met you because you were standing maybe like, I think it might've been in the blacksmith tent, and you were like, talking to some of the blacksmith guys over the table, and you had a backpack on. In your backpack, I saw the axe handles, the faceted axe handles sticking out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just like, hey man, can I take a look at your axe handles? And you're like, sure. And you just took one out and handed it to me. And then you like continued your conversation with whoever was you were talking to, which was cool. Yeah. And I was just like looking at it. I was like, whoa, this thing is wild. You know, like I had seen faceted handles and I had like, but nothing exactly like that. Like the lines were really clean and crisp. I remember thinking like, man, this would really give you like some serious blisters potentially. And like, but you know, it was like, it looks so slick, you know? And it was like, it was just these perfectly crisp lines going down nice and even, like symmetrical. I'm an artist. So I'm like looking at all those things and a knife maker and an axe guy. Right.
Right.
And so then like years later, I put it together after like seeing your, you know, seeing your stuff and like being like, that definitely had to have been Glenn, like that those, because I like it's far enough back, and I like I said, I didn't know you at the time, so I was like, it took me a little while to put two and two together, but it was like 100% that it was like your axe handles, because like now when I see them, I was like, yeah, that was it. That's just like crazy that that happened, and it was like enough that like I saw what you had and it caught my eye from like a distance where I like walked up and I was like, whoa, those are cool.
That's awesome. It's you know, it was like the palm swell sticking out. I remember that interaction like specifically because I didn't know who you were either.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I think we were there with what's his name, Jackman.
Paul Jackman. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Paul Jackman was standing there. I was trying to pedal off a muzzle loader barrel. Cause I'm like, I've got this thing in my hand. I don't know what to do with it. Does somebody else want to forge something out of it? And everyone's like, no, fuck it. I don't want it. And I think Jackman took it.
That's wild.
Yeah. No, that was fun. That was fun. I remember that specifically. Fun. I remember that specifically. It was getting late. I was supposed to leave by then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's cool. Nice, right on. So, so for the Revenant, when we were chatting, you kind of tell me a little bit about like how the shape has evolved and some things you've changed or whatever, how you've kind of put some time and effort into getting that shape exactly right. So what was that? I mean, I know you said you like beards and you like, you know, cheeks, you know, and you like you like that shape and that you hadn't seen it. Like, cause to me, that's like, it's a kind of a fun mix of modifications that I've seen, but not like exactly that. And the Elwell patterns, you know, that kind of long slopey beard. And I did some modifications to half hatchets at one point, kind of doing the similar type of thing, the chicken hawk or the rooster mod. And so like when I saw the Revenant, it was like all those things together, but with a little bit of like rock and roll, which I thought was fun.
Okay. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, how is that, has that pattern, changed over the years? I know you do it in different sizes and you do some with the fireman's pick on the side and whatnot. Is like, how's that changed over the years and why?
I think it came down to tooling and skill level. You know, in the beginning I had a shape that I wanted to achieve, and then over time certain details I was chasing for crispness. You know, the bevel on the inside of the beard is really important to me. I want that bevel to, I want it to be sharp. It used to be rounded because I used to carve them all out with angle grinders. Now I've got a 2x72 with all the different tooling arms. So sky's the limit now. I can go hog on these things and just get real crazy. But with an angle grinder, I was limited. Pull height matters, proportion from the front of the eye to the back of the eye. that in the beginning didn't make a lot of sense to me. I didn't understand the dynamic of the proper way to hang the axe, where that seat, the stance and how to push your toe forward, pull it back. Mm-hmm. All of those nuances, you know, the axe 2.0, you know, you get past mm-hmm. the 1.0 part of hanging an axe and you start getting into the real details. Mm-hmm. And that's when things really started to evolve with the Revenant, was eye shape, pole shape, finish, detail. I was always obsessed with the beveled jerseys, you know, the Kelly Perfects mm-hmm. And those. How do I get a Phantom bevel look into a Revenant? How do I get that? Mm-hmm. Started playing around with those shapes, thinning the front, thinning the spine. What does that do to the performance? How does that change the balance? How does it change the swing? What kind of geometry am I looking for? Am I just going to flat grind these all the way through? What's the right bevel for a general purpose axe? You know, you can always ask your customer, what are you going to do with this thing? And they're like, I don't know. Most people don't know what they're going to do with it. They just want it. Yeah. So I'll land it at a 20 degree. Gives you flexibility. You can get a nice clean chop, or you can split with it. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the one shape, you know, the single bit Revenant, I wanted bigger, I wanted heavier. How do I get that? You can't get that out of. You can only peel so much away from a 3.5 pound Michigan. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get crucified for cutting up Connie's. I didn't want to get crucified for cutting up jerseys. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I didn't want to start with a jersey because it kind of felt like I was cheating.
Right.
Like it's already got legs. There. It's already there. Yeah. It's already there. Now all I'm doing is peeling a radius into it. Detailing that beard radius was also a big one for me. I'm obsessed with the golden spiral, the rule of thirds, divine geometry. Mm-hmm. These curves work for a reason. The math is there. And when you understand those curves, you can see them without a template. You don't need anything. You just see them.
Right.
And that's what happened with the Revenant. It's not a circle. I'm not cutting a perfectly clean circle out of it. It's a French curve in the beard of the Revenant. And it's there and you can see it and it works. And that's why it works. Mm-hmm. The proportions from that curve sloping into the bottom of the cheeks, all of that matters. And and that's it. It's the geometry. I want to see those lines. I'm obsessed with them.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's definitely one of those things that I think as a knife maker and an axe guy, those proportions and those curves, the more you know, the better you get at it. And I think that's one of those things that really stands that separates new makers from experienced makers is the proportions and the geometry and the curves and the straight lines, how they all work together. Because it's the first thing I see when I see a new maker. I see those things are not right. You know, I can't tell you exactly what's not right, but I know that they're just not right. And then you see an experienced maker and you're like, oh, you can see they've figured it out, or at least they understand. The more you see, the more you make those adjustments until it just starts to feel right.
Yeah, it almost becomes muscle memory. You program those curves into your brain. You use them enough and they just become second nature to your design. And it just turned into a style. You know, it became one. So now I can take the single bit Revenant and turn it into a double bit. I can take the double bit and turn it into a spike back. And you can look at that and say, that's a Revenant. Because they all look like they belong to the same family.
Right.
The curves are all there.
Does the name have anything to do with the movie?
No, nothing whatsoever.
What'd you
call I've never that? Actually seen the movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Oh, yeah, it's a great one.
I'd like to see it. I really do. No, the name came from originally it was called The Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was called The Voyager because I wanted it to feel like something you could take everywhere. It was a short handle originally. It never was anything more than a 24-inch handle. Nice. I felt like a 2 to 2.5 pound axe was a hatchet or a boy's axe. You know, you can take it and do things with it. The high center of gravity gave it some good working power. It's a hardened pole. So it's a hammer too, if you need it to be. But it started getting longer. I'm like, oh, let's throw a 28-inch handle on it, see what it does. Oh, shit, that's awesome. I like that. Let's throw it on a 32. Oh, shit, I like that too. Okay. So it's a 22 to a – actually a 16 to a 32 now. Yeah.
And I like that like Voyager mindset and the Boys Axe mindset, because that's the like – that's that weight that to me I feel like, you know, if I had to have just one axe, it would be a Boys Axe, because it is a versatile, light enough that you can put it on a pack and hike out with it, you know, heavy enough that you can cut down a tree with it if you needed to.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you were moving and you need to be on the go, 2 to 2.5 pounds is the right weight. You don't want to carry around a big 36-inch felling axe.
Right. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. You're going to catch it on everything as you go.
So you started with the Voyager, and then how did it transfer over to the Revenant?
I don't remember what happened and why I changed it, but it I felt like it needed to change. Mm. It was just something I woke up one morning and I was just like, this ain't the Voyager. I need something cooler than that. And I wanted more names. I wanted it to be a line of axes. And like, how do I evolve that? And I found the word Revenant. The definition has since changed from when I first found it. And this, which I found really odd, because I just the other day went and looked up the dictionary definition of the word revenant. I just did a video the other day displaying that definition.
I saw that. Yeah. It
was cool. I had fun with that. That took me fucking forever.
It was like two years of scrolling.
But my first finding of that definition was a lost or forgotten traveler, fought for dead, returned as if dead, which felt so right for this axe, because it was very much a lost and forgotten rusty piece of steel that I brought back to life.
Wait, that was the first definition you said?
Yes.
Yeah, that is the movie Revenant.
It is the movie The Revenant. Exactly. Yeah,
that is the story for sure.
But that is exactly what it means.
It comes
from the French word revenir, which is lost and thought for dead and returned. Traveler, not so much involved there, and that's where the Voyager evolved. That was where I connected the two thoughts, was Voyager into Revenant, lost and forgotten, revived from the dead, brand new thing. So it felt right. Now I can take this and build a line off of it. So you've got your Revenant, and now shit, it was Mark. I started to call them Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3, Mark 5. Nice.
Yeah.
Just to get, I like that. I like the feel of that. It feels, you know, feels evolutionary, you know?
Yeah.
But it has, you know, I can't take the same, basically the same head that I was carving in 2021. Still very much a Revenant, and comparing that to one that I make now. They're not the same thing. They look associated with each other. It's still got my name on it. It is still a Revenant, but there's nuances.
Right.
And being an axe collector, you know, you look at stamps, you look at etches, you look at those little nuances. You know, this plum has a narrow pull. It's more valuable than this one. And I kept all that stuff in mind as I was growing and developing. Like, I'll stamp this one a little bit different. I'll stamp that one a little bit different. Maybe someday, 100 years from now, I can confuse the shit out of some axe.
Is that a 2021 or 2022?
Exactly, right? So it was just fun for me. And it was never anything like, no delusions of grandeur, like, oh, Glenn's going to be famous someday and these things are going to be collector's items. No, it was just fun for me. And I was like, yeah, let's evolve the logo. Let's evolve the etch. Let's just let this thing continue to grow so that it just continues to change and people can see it grow.
Nice. That's awesome.
Devin's gone.
Okay. I'm going to see if he can join back in to us. I did a timestamp real quick. So if he does come back on, we'll be good to go. And if not, we'll just, we'll refresh it and start anew.
Sounds good.
But while we're waiting for him, one of the things that I like about that, like that mindset, of the, like, you know, laying down specific, like things along the way that show your progression. I think that's cool. I think it has like a perfect like line of history that's in the history of accidents and in the history of art. But that's something I've also like thought about over time, especially with restoring axes, where I'm taking an axe that I'm restoring, but I'm not doing anything new to it other than putting a new handle on it, cleaning it up and sharpening it, and then wanting to put my logo on it. So that way, if I send it off to somebody, then it has that stamp of coming through my shop.
Sure.
You know, and like, I've gone back and forth on that. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like,
I've got rules.
Is it, yeah. Like, so that, like, so yeah, what's your thought on that?
I've got rules about that. I put my name on the head when I've completely changed or reimagined that head. If it's a Revenant now, it's got my name on it. If I heat treat it, I'll stamp my initials. If it's still the original axe and I haven't modified its shape, but if I heat treat it, I'll throw my GH stamp on the bottom discreetly, like what's his face, Watson did for Snow and Neely. Was it Snow and Neely? Emerson and Stevens. Ines. I don't know.
Yeah.
He had this W stamp. And I thought that was so classy. Get these particular axes and you can see that stamp and you know who heat treated it.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's cool. Right. So that's another one of those little things. So yeah, if I make the handle, absolutely put my name on it. And if you make that handle, put your fucking name on it. But if you didn't make the axe, don't put your name on it. It's not yours.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, so my like reasoning behind wanting to put something on it was like to have the history of where it's been.
Sure. I get that.
And so that was the reason why I did it. And when I was in college, I took an Asian art class. And when you see like an Asian print, it'll have a bunch of those red stamps on it. Right. Mm-hmm. And those are the names of the owners of the print.
Oh,
it's not the artist. It's actually, I mean, the artist is there too, but like as that print transfers from owner to owner, the owner will put their stamp on there.
That's interesting. So
then you have this like genealogy of where this piece of art has come through, you know, where it's been. And I thought that was cool. I like that idea, but even still, even with that in my mind and even with like, you know, I've done it a few times where I've made an axe for someone and I'll laser etch my logo on the opposite side of the logo of the original one and send it out. I've done it a couple times, but I've always felt it's never felt exactly right. And I kind of like your rules. I think those are like, I think that's a sound, you know, that's like you're changing it. You're changing it pretty significantly. And then it's like you're breathing new life back into it, right? You're doing the new heat treat. So that makes sense to like, it's done that. But, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I feel like there, I want to leave a mark on it that shows that it's come through my shop if it's going somewhere else. And I'm not opposed to it.
I'm really not.
Yeah.
I'm not. I think you're right. It makes sense to leave your mark on the thing in some way that you reprofiled it. You put a new edge on it. You gave it, you breathe new life into it. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not opposed to it at all. It really doesn't bother me what other people do. Like, I'm the last person to judge anyone on what they do to an axe. The things that I do to axes leave axe collectors absolutely appalled. Like, I'm the antichrist in a lot of ways to axe collectors.
All right, a little bit of technical difficulties, but we're back. You know, if you are one who listens to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast often, you know that this is something that we deal with often. So there's always a little bit of internet stuff, but we make it work.
2 hours later.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. For some reason, my phone hotspot, which is running our internet, just decided to stop working for no reason. It looked like it was working. Everything was hooked up, but no, we were not there.
It was bad.
Yeah. All right, Dev, you have some this or that questions
for Glenn? Yeah, let's do the this or that. Glenn, we've been doing it for all our guests ever since Jimmy DiResta jumped on. He was our first, and now you're, I don't know, our fourth or fifth to play the game, so it should be fun.
Cool, let's do it.
Yeah. All right, here we go. So just, I'm going to give you either or, this or that. Just give me what rolls off your head first, which one you like, and then after we're done, you can kind of... if you need to defend your position. All right.
I love it. Let's go.
bacon or sausage? A long pause.
This is hard. This is hard. I love them both so much. Fuck you for starting with that.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If we're talking, a good bratwurst, I'm gonna choose sausage.
Okay, Milwaukee or DeWalt. I'm gonna keep them coming. Fucking well, you got to pick one.
I don't care about brands. Okay, I'm indifferent. Okay. I'm indifferent. I'm not brand loyal. We'll go with. They're both awesome, but I'll just pick Milwaukee to be a dick.
Okay, Coke or Pepsi?
Again, neither. I don't drink soda.
All right. Flat bar, crowbar, or pry bar?
Ooh, crowbar.
Faceted or round?
Faceted all day.
4K or 1080?
Don't give a shit. But clean is clean. 1080. I'm going to go 1080.
There you go. So you give a little bit of a shit. All right, table saw or track saw?
Table saw.
Blonde or brunette?
That's a tricky one. My wife's a natural blonde, but she dyes her hair brunette. So whatever color my wife's hair is.
You know, we've gotten that for every married person, they all answered the same way. So I should just ask, what color is your wife's hair? And then we'll get to
you. Just add that as the either or.
Yeah,
or AKA. Whatever color your wife's hair is.
Yeah, whoever you're with at the moment.
Yeah.
Bagel or biscuit?
Bagel.
Nice. Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix.
Home Depot or Lowe's?
Depends on what I want. I'm going to go with Home Depot.
Okay. Black walnut or cherry?
Ooh, fuck you for that too. Black walnut. I love a good cherry board though. God, if it's curly, I'm already getting... I got a medium. Continue. Next one.
Started with the blonde or brunette question. Here we are.
I didn't get excited until you started talking about wood.
Workbench Con or Maker Camp?
Maker Camp all day.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings or Star Wars?
Ah, damn it. I'm a Star Wars guy. I fucking love Star Wars. So if we're going to go original Gen X Star Wars, we're going Star Wars, but I really love Lord of the Rings. But I'm more of a Lord of the Rings book guy over the movies, so I'll take Star Wars if it's the movies, Lord of the Rings in the books.
Okay, good.
I've read them all.
Fender or Gibson?
I've played them both, and I like them both. Fender.
Timex or Rolex?
Timex, I'm cheap.
Waterworld or Dances with Wolves?
Dances with fucking Wolves, come on. That's not even a question.
All right.
Waterworld's kick ass though. It's so shitty. It's good.
It's so good.
I love
it. It's so good. I love Waterworld. It's a good it's awesome. It's that's awesome. Dances with Wolves, come on. It's like Last Samurai. Last Samurai is just Dance with Wolves with swords.
Yeah, it's good.
The last one, which is one for you. So the last, how many, Dust? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions have been to each guest. It kind of aims at them, but anyone can come up with something. So the last one aimed at you is one-hander or two-hander?
For me?
Yeah.
Two-hander.
Okay. That's it. Well done. Good oh, answers. Yeah, nice. Good answers.
Yeah, the last five. So it's like, I forget what they are, but they've all been specific to
kind of
the
yeah.
people, so the figured, guests we've had on a little bit more.
I would do so. Kind of an axe thing, but that is yeah. one-hander, two-hander, could be broad. And I kind of want to make them semi-broad where anyone right. can kind of, I don't want to be too specific.
I like that. That was a good mix. That was fun.
Yeah, no, it was a good responses. I agree with a lot of them. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, usually the Home Depot or Lowe's, everyone's usually kind of, all the responses are usually kind of similar. It's either like, they like different things from each one, or they like, or it's whichever one's convenient at the time.
You know, right. It's like, well, this I mean, one's it's closer
to
for.
Me, so that's what I go to, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're good for. I mean, I feel like Lowe's, in the beginning, was like a really good Orchard Supply Hardware. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have Orchard Supply on the East Coast?
No.
I know that name, California but thing. We don't know. Yeah.
Orchard Supply Hardware was this, it was like Tractor Supply.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But less farmy.
Okay.
Less farmy. And then Orchard. They started to appeal to the home renovator or the homeowner that just wanted to throw some cheap fancy shit on their front lawn.
Right. Yeah.
Which I felt like Lowe's started to evolve into, where Home Depot, it's just like, I need some cheap wood.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's cheap wood. It's like your tool section sucks. You know, it's all the yeah. same shit. You know, I'm not going there to get a nice fucking dovetail saw, but I need a pair of pliers.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it's there. It will always be in stock, usually. And
Yeah.
I think we just grew up with Home Depot, so that's why I prefer it if I had to. But they're just same store, different colors, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing that I would go to Lowe's specifically for was 1/8-inch brass rod they had in the metal section. And it was like,
oh, there you go.
I could just stop and pick it up. And they didn't have it at Home Depot until recently. I was at a Home Depot, and I like just stopped by the metal section. I was like, oh, look at that. They've got brass rod in 1/8-inch now.
Which one did we determine, Dust? So we did a video on going to the different places to find like where you could get your best axe handle just from a, you know, hardware big store, box store. Handle.
Yeah.
Which one won? I actually forget.
I don't remember either. I think they're all, it was like everyone was hit or miss. Like which everyone.
One of them didn't have anything, but that could have just been the store. Like it was just sold out of.
I think Lowe's was the worst, if I remember correctly.
I think both those stores are garbage for handles. But you know where you get the most luck are the small town Ace Hardwares.
Yeah.
We actually found that there was a couple good handles at Ace, but yeah. I think you stumbled into Home Depot. They just happened to, you know, it's very hit or miss. So you happen to find a few good ones at Home Depot that day. It just
everything
worked up.
Yeah. I mean, they're all 36 inches, you know, and they're all they're all baseball bats, you know, which like, you know, if I'm just looking for a full size axe handle, someone wants like a long one, then, you know, I'll grab one and I'll just make sure I get one that's super beefy. So that way I can then shape it down to, you know, a nice palm swell and a nice like thin handle and a good
rasp travel.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Fit it down and make it awesome. It's a piece of wood you're going to jam into a piece of metal. It's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I was in, like, I just recently did I just finished the Great Divider, which is like a mechanical axe, like the chopper mm-hmm. one.
I love
that. I'd never seen the Great Divider before until like a buddy of ours had it at his house and he asked me if I could restore for him. So I was like, sure. You know, I was like, absolutely. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, cool. You know, I saw him pick it up and I heard it like rattle and I was like, oh, it's a chopper. And then he picked it up and I was like, that's not a chopper. I've never seen the Great Divider before.
It's I didn't know the difference either. Like, I just thought that it was just, they were both one and the same. Right, and I really don't understand the nuances between the two. I've never swung one, but I want one really bad.
Yeah, I never swung one either until I restored this one. And it's a weird feeling because, like, when I split wood with it, it rattles like a loose head, but it's not. But it's because the bits and pieces are clink, clink, clink. They're like rattling around, which is kind of a weird feeling.
It's jarring.
It took me a minute to get used to like not feeling like the axe head was going to fly off because it was like loose. And then once I could see how it worked and it was cool. You know, it's like in my own determination, it was like, I'd rather just use a splitting axe. Like if I'm going to split, because it was, it's lighter and faster and it split just as well, if not better. But it was fun, you know. It was like the novelty of it was fun. I was like, oh, this is cool.
That's my attraction to it. It looks like kind of a novelty axe, and it's there's nothing like it in the world. And why not? Right. I want one. I just want one. Like I love Bell Systems tools.
Yeah.
You know, they've got those lineman wrench. They've got the lineman hatchet with the square hole.
They
got
the square hole
notch on the bottom. Uh-huh. I love them. I think they're cool as shit.
Yeah, and you got a big, fat, chunky logo, cool logo, like the Chopper's old school. And the Great Divider actually has a really cool logo, too, which when we shined it up and you know, has it have it against the black, it looks really good. So,
it's cool.
Speaking of that video, if you guys haven't seen it, it just came out today. So if you'll be listening to this tomorrow, it's out. Check it out. There were some questions and answers. So on the... what would you call them, Dust? The ratcheting pieces.
The levers.
So on the levers, when you're grinding off, you saw a stamp WQ. Did you see? Mm. We got someone response who might have.
Oh yeah, I didn't see the response.
No. He says, one quick search mentioned WQ possibly meaning Warren and Quinn, which was an axe manufacturer. Oh. Might be the mark source. So. That's one idea from someone who wrote something already. I don't know them.
Yeah, because when I was taking off those leathers, I pulled everything apart and wire wheeled and cleaned everything, and then painted it all and put it all back together. They had a stamp. They had the same stamp, but then there was something different. One was like an L and one was a T or something.
So maybe that was this one's supposed to be top, this one's supposed to be bottom, but then they both had WQ.
Yeah, because it was the Warren Tool Company of Ohio. It's not Warren Axe and Tool, but Warren Ohio or something like
that. So maybe Warren...
It's different than the Warren Axe Company?
Yeah, Warren Axe and Tool, it was not that. And so I looked up the Great Divider, and it was made in the mid-70s or something, and didn't last for too long. But yeah, it was... Warren Tool Company of Ohio. I think that's what it was.
So maybe Quinn was like the longer name, you know, when they just shortened something because that's what people started to know it as, and just they never stopped stamping parts as WQ.
That's cool.
That could be. Yeah. If it was just, if they had only produced one set of dies for that particular piece of tooling, they just never bothered to change them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They were definitely in the same spot on both, you know, so it would have been in the tooling pretty much.
Cool.
Yeah. I love that little stuff. I love all that little history about
it. Oh, yeah. It's fun to find it. And I'm glad we recorded as you actually found it. There was no hey, say that again. Or it was you found it and you started talking through your mask. And then you're looking up on the phone. And I caught all that. So that's, I like when there's real bits.
Yeah.
Caught on camera.
Nice.
This guy's talking about, because a lot of people, whenever you wire wheel stuff, a lot of people say, why don't you just soak it? How do you feel about that, Dust? How do you feel about that, Glenn? If you get, I'm sure you've cleaned many, many an axe. What do you think about just soaking the stuff? I guess, well, you just go ahead. I'm not going to.
It depends on the job, really. I mean, if patina matters. Mm. You know, you got to pay attention to what you soak it in. Evaporust does a great job of pulling rust off, but it definitely also peels patina away. And if you want to preserve that old look to something, I'll soak it in Simple Green and wire wheel it. That'll keep it looking dark. You know, it'll maintain some age, but you got to be real gentle with your wire wheel.
Right.
If it's super crusty, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably my biggest, the reason why I usually wire wheel. One is just out of I'm impatient. You know, I'm I have the axe, I want it clean right away. I just flip on the wire wheel and just start going at it. You know, it's going to take me 5 minutes to hit both sides, get all the stuff off.
Shit, dude, I'll throw them in the forge.
Yeah, right. Burn off. Yes, right.
Burn exactly. it off.
But I also like when, you know, I like the temper line that you see, but I like that it's there, just like a hint of it in like original patina. And then as soon as you throw it into any type of like chemical agent, it like makes it pop a lot, you know, because it's reacting with the steel differently. And I'm not a big fan of that. Obviously a lot worse if you're doing something like vinegar instead of, you know, a more neutral, like evaporust or what is it? Tool restoration, that one. Which we've done. I like the look. And again, like you said, Glenn, I think it's more of the patina thing. I like the look of the patina, the older patina on it.
Yeah.
So, I found that just like a normal steel wire wheel does the best. And like you said, if I'm trying to preserve stuff, I'll just go gently with it, you know, spray it with some WD-40 and just like gently hit it. And if I'm just trying to get rust off and it don't matter, then I'll just lean into it and get it off.
And yeah. I mean, if you're going to grind it and refinish it, throw it in the evaporust and get rid of it all. And then, but if you want to preserve those pits, you want to keep the character, keep it out of the chemicals.
Yep.
I don't like the finish when you pull it out of vinegar or even a deep evaporust. So this is specific to axes and, you know, bladed tools. I don't like the look of that bare metal. You know, I want some character to it. That's why my Revenants have the color that they do. You know, I keep that tempered look.
Yeah. No, you know, I think that's
just,
cool.
It just gives it character. They just look more interesting to me.
Yep.
For sure. There's one more. Let me see. There was one. People talking about liking the Shinto rasp. I'm glad we mentioned it and also did a short on Instagram of it. This guy said, I had a chopper too when I was a kid. Similar concept. We thought we were hot stuff when my dad finally gave in and bought one for us. That's cool. A bunch of kids just into axes. That's funny. Like a group of friends, I can imagine. Like, dude, check it out.
We're so cool.
This thing makes them fly so far.
Chopper. It's funny that he says chopper too, because in my mind, it's always chopper two as well. But then when I look them up, they're almost, like all the ones chopper that I found ones. Online are chopper one.
Yeah.
So I know it's out there.
They're both what's there. What's the other one? Oh, and then just someone else asking, how's this thing actually work? You'd like to met, like, that'd be cool if we like had an animated thing showing it coming down and the thing's pushing it out, and I don't know, maybe we can do that AI or something, but
that'd be cool to see it like in if you could position a really, really stable camera. Yeah. And get it in slow motion where you can see that.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of the video, I went out and chopped a bunch of wood with it. And then I used the chopper. I used a splitting maul. I used a splitting axe. And then I used a felling axe, like four rounds in a row. And then I kind of compared them. But Devin and I were talking about it, and we were like, okay, well, it actually makes a little more sense if we just do like an individual video on that. So we're leaving that like big chunk of video out of the end of this video. And we're going to do another video where basically I'm just talking about the four different types and like comparing them, just get some more content. Right. But,
that's awesome. I like that.
But because we're like extending it, we could actually get some more shots, Devin. Actually, that'd be kind of fun.
Because we want to shoot a new intro and outro, and then just, I think our camera goes up to like 250, 300 frames a second. So that might be just good enough to see, and maybe I can half that. So like 600 frames, you think you'd be able to catch the mechanism at work?
Oh yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Try it.
I think it'd be fine. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, that's some of the first things coming in.
Nice.
For that video.
Sweet. Yeah, that one's fun. Like, you know, I had never used one before either, so it was an interesting thing. It was a weird feeling, but it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was excited to see that you guys were doing that. So I'm definitely going to check that video out, cuz
nice.
Those axes just fascinate me. They're weird. There's just they're different.
Yeah. And that, like, as when I started to pull it apart, I was like, I mean, I knew that it's a very basic machine, but like I was surprised at how basic it really is. It's just four, the levers and the spring, you know, and like and then the bolt that's going through it. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's so simple.
Does it really feel like it is it springing that split apart?
I couldn't feel it in my hands, but I could see the wood. It looked like it popped apart faster. Like the two chunks like flew apart and like rolled away.
The feels like, weird. Huh. But just kinda watching and then looking at the footage again, it seems to throw them farther. Not that there's that's necessarily a good thing.
Right.
See, like, that was my theory with this thing, is that it's got a very, very broad splitting geometry. So even without all the mechanisms, I mean, it'd be curious to test it, take all the mechanicals out of it.
Right, and just try it
split it
like that. Yeah,
Just split with it like that, with just the geometry, and just watch how the log reacts. Is it providing efficiency in the split, or is it just throwing the wood further, the two halves further away?
Yeah, and I think, like, because of how wide the geometry of the edge is, it's working like a maul as opposed to an axe. And so, the first couple hits I did with both the Great Divider and the maul are bouncing off, you know, because it, like, takes a few times to get a crack going. You know, so I'm like, and I'm not trying to, like, kill it. I'm just trying to swing it. I'm trying to swing them all normal. And so that's like, okay, well, now I have to swing this heavy thing more times, you know? So then when I use the splitting axe, which, again, like, the splitting axe as opposed to the felling axe, really with, like, a wide, you know, taper the whole way, you get this, like, wedge shape axe that's designed to split, but it has a shallow geometry on the edge. That one seemed like it worked the best, right? Because it was like, I wasn't throwing it a whole bunch of times. I had to swing it a little harder because it's lighter, but...
What were you using?
I was using a 4.5 pound plum jersey.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a splitter, you know, 'cause it's a big wedge pattern. And then I was using, I think I was using a Kelly Perfect as the felling axe, just to, you know, try that
one.
Yeah,
those are narrow. Yeah, those are narrow. That's a good one.
So the other, it's four, you said 4 pounder?
Yeah, it was like 4 or 4.5.
So it's a little bit heavier.
Yeah, right. So the chopper is probably like 5 or 6. The maul, I think, was 8. Yeah, it's got some weight to it. But
yeah, and there's the that thing geometry. Of, I mean, you're used to the smaller axes also.
Yeah, right.
And like you said, the weight, you know, if you're doing it all day, you start to get tired. You start to screw up. You start to, you know, overstrike and, you know, then you end up with an axe in your foot.
Yeah, our buddy Theo, who owns it, it's his axe. He loves it. You know, he said he uses it all the time. He splits tons. You know, he splits like a couple cords of wood, you know, every year. He's got this giant stack of wood in his backyard. So.
Does he have a wood stove or something? Or no, he just has a.
I think he just has it for the fire pit outside. Yeah, but he likes it, so it's cool.
I love a heavy splitter. I used to split exclusively with a maul, you know, they're almost too broad. Sometimes kind of feels like you're throwing a hammer, but. When I got my hands on the Council 5 pound splitter, fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And then I got the FE6, changed my whole life.
Changed That's my life, man.
All I split with now. I smoothed out just the face. I didn't even reprofile the bevels. You know, they're still pretty broad, like factory bevels. I'm probably like 26 degrees.
Nice.
But you just smoothed out that face grind, and oh my god, like, I beat the shit out of this axe. It's still got its original handle. I think 2 seasons worth of red oak and maple. Nice. And it's a rock star. Like, it's my favorite splitting axe. I absolutely love it.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, there's something like, I don't split a ton of wood. I usually, if I'm like cutting wood, it's you know, bucking down longer pieces for the fire pit. So I'm typically using either like a boy's axe or I'm using a felling axe. So I don't use that splitter all that often, but it definitely was the best for actually splitting rounds of wood. It was like, that was by far the best. I was like, oh yeah, it's not surprising why this is designed this way, because it works the best.
Imagine that.
All right, Glenn, we love to ask all the guests that join us on the podcast to tell us their disaster stories, because we, as makers, everyone fucks up. Everyone has a disaster now and again, but in the world of social media, people don't always see that. So, like, everyone thinks that everyone is, like, perfect, you know, quote unquote, right? You know, so we love to have our maker guests tell us their disaster stories, because, you know, we all love a good disaster story. So you got something for us?
Oh God, I've got so many. I love sharing failure. It's almost my favorite content. It really is. Nice. You get excited on a build and you're showing progress, you know, and I bounce back and forth between displaying the build in my full posts, and then use my stories as like the behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So the people that are really engaged and want to watch the process of how this thing comes together, they're also watching my stories. Nice. And yeah. I get a little spicy sometimes, and spicy brain kicks in late night mode, and I start deconstructing the build, or I'm going into theory, you know. Mm-hmm. I talked earlier about, you know, my heat treat process and learning and evolving heat treating axes. And this has been my biggest point of failure was learning heat treat, understanding heat treat. You spend X number of hours grinding an axe to, you know, this revenant head to exactly what it needs to be, or sometimes six at a time.
Yeah.
To put them in a gas forge. I had a problem with a certain run of heads, and I don't know. I think I boiled it down to my process. There was nothing wrong with the steel. I was overheating the eyes for a period of time, laying them in a gas forge, the eye wall being significantly thinner than the face and the pole, heats up much faster and much hotter than the rest of the metal. So I'd go to quench it and it would be fine. Sometimes it would crack, sometimes it would not. If it didn't crack, I'm like, okay, we're good. And then it would crack in temper. Why is it cracking in temper? What the fuck is going on? It's that. So I went through a series of, God, it was 6 or 7, like in a row, just catastrophic failures, 6 to 7 hours of grinding, over and over and over and over again. It beat the shit out of me. And I remember sitting at night at the table, my wife's looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm a sham. I'm a complete failure. I don't know how I got away with it as long as I did, but it's, everything's fucked. No matter what I do, they just keep breaking. And that was what I figured out, was that disparity of thermal mass. And every time, if it didn't fail in quench, you're usually okay. But why was it breaking in temper?
Right.
Because I'd quenched the whole thing. And so I didn't give it a differential hardness. And that's why a lot of axe manufacturers only quench the edge. So you've got a soft eye and a soft pull. I'm a stubborn bastard, and I wanted the whole thing hard. So I would take it out of quench, and then I would torch temper the eye, blow it through a torch, get it to cobalt, or, you know, like a rich blue, and then I'd bring it into temper, and usually it would work out. Sometimes still would fail. Okay, what the fuck? It turned into I would fill the eyes with refractory cement.
Oh man.
Before I put them in for heat treat. So jeez. A whole block. So the whole thing is now a solid thermal mass. Not a single break afterward. Not a single break afterward. Then I said, okay, this has everything to do with the gas forge. I'm heating it too fast. Directional heat. They're just getting blasted from the top. I got a two burner Venturi burner forge.
Yep.
Nothing fancy. And it just blasts top. You try to pull them out, flip it, keep it even, but it's pretty hard to do with an axe. So so it brought me to the even heat. And I pulled the trigger and got myself a regulated oven. No breakage. No breakage. So it's that understanding what you're doing.
Right.
You're not just, yes, heat it to non-magnetic, quench in oil. It's not that simple.
Right.
What is actually happening to the steel when you heat it? Are you overheating? Are you creating too much of a coarse crystalline structure in the austenite phase? Read the books. You know, read the books. Dr. Laren Thomas writes this book called Knife Engineering. And it's a great book. You know, in the beginning, all I was doing was thumbing through the end to the mm-hmm. to the appendix.
Yeah, right.
I got 80 CRV2. How do I heat treat 80 CRV2? Mm-hmm. How do I heat treat 01? And you got the recipe. If I want this hardness, heat it to this, quench it at that, temper it this.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to it. How do you get there? Yeah. How do you get there? How did you get there? How fast did you get there? How long did it take? What did you do in between? All of those things contribute to the final product.
Hmm.
All of those things contribute. So that's the part, that's the brain now. So that all that right. failure isn't failure at all. It's just, it's evolution. It's knowledge now. It's
yeah,
not
it's a journey. Yeah.
It's not information. You know, the appendix at the back of the book is the information.
Right.
Reading the book is the information, but the application of the information becomes knowledge, and the failure in between that becomes wisdom.
Nice. That's nice. I like it. Yeah. I mean, I think just that, like every disaster story that we've gotten from people is that way. It's like, oh, there's just that moment of like, you just put your head down, you're on in your hands and you're like, God damn it. Like, I got to start over. It's that frustration, but it's all these people we talked to didn't stop there. You know, they kept going, they kept trying, you know, different ways. They all fixed that mistake or they on the next one, they made it better. Right. Cause it's the education you get from that failure, which I think is something we don't see, but it's super important for people to understand that, like, you got to keep going. You have to understand what happened, and you have to be able to like look at those failures and say, okay, why is this failing? Why is it doing what it's doing? And how do I not do it next time? Because it right. sucks when it fails.
Well, it's very difficult, and especially from a content creation perspective, it's very difficult to articulate that languish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of yes, we do go through that. Everyone goes through it. No matter how skilled or how many successes you've had, you fuck them up all the time.
Yeah, right.
You fuck them up all the time, but it's not a failure. Right. And, you know, and that's the beauty of sharing it is you get to say, look what fucking happened.
Mm.
Like, I was just as excited as you were. And now it's broken.
Hmm.
But with every failure I share, I want to share what I figured out in the process of that failure. This is why this broke, or this is why I believe this broke. Was it I had a run of handles that just kept breaking.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over again. Six fucking handles on a batch of three. Took me seven handles to get to three.
Hmm.
I couldn't figure out what was going on. It was over dried kiln dried wood.
Yep.
You know, I go to the lumber store, I buy my boards one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I hand select my lumber. I cut them from scratch. So I pay attention. I know what the wood looks like, but you can't see inside the wood.
Yeah, right.
You can't see inside the wood. So yeah. You've only got so much control, and right. I think that's the aspect of things that you just kind of have to forgive.
Right.
And if it's going to blow up, yeah, you did your best.
Right. Yeah. It's understanding, like, but knowing why, right. It's like,
but
okay,
know why.
Yeah. Right. It's going to happen. It's just going to keep happening, especially when you're using things that are out of your control. Like you said, like wood, you don't know, there could be a little bug hole inside that you can't tell, or there could be some type right. of void inside. You know, as like over the years doing bow making, I'd say bow making is the hardest because the wood is so unpredictable.
Sure.
You know, it's the most stressful of all the hobbies that I do because it's so unpredictable. You know, you're putting so much tension on this thing that
it's a lot of stress.
Yeah, there could be some unknown piece of whatever. Like I was doing a bow making demo at Maker Camp 2 years ago, and the last day I was doing my finished tillering on a bow, and then it just broke in the last like 10 minutes of the demonstration. And so we looked inside, and you could see there were these like little voids where there were wormholes that I couldn't see anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, well, there it is. Like, that's the reason. It just happens, and sometimes that happens. Like, yeah, you know, you learn from it, and you move on, and you just hopefully next time that's not hidden in there.
Well, and it builds to your knowledge of the material too. You know, you start to look for right. signs.
Yep.
You know, inclusions, pin knots, yeah. Mm-hmm. All those things, they hide underneath the surface. You can't necessarily see right. them, but you're like, ooh, I like this little brown streak on this piece of hickory. This is cool. That'll add some character. It's probably a pin knot.
Yep. Yeah.
It's probably an inclusion. Don't chase it. I've had wormholes and axe handles too. You know, I've gone all the way through cutting the blank, planing it flat, and then laminate the swells, and then as soon as I start carving, it's just like, boom, there's a wormhole. Oh, there's another wormhole. Okay, we're done.
Yep, no, that
just
one's
stop.
Yeah, firewood.
Just stop. Yeah.
Wisdom, it takes you so far, and then eventually, like, you go to someone who really knows their stuff on whatever subject, and you're like, hey, this keeps happening, and sometimes it's just, yeah, that happens. That's the end of the road. You're like, oh, okay, good to know.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. But I think that's where the experience comes in, you know, and
that's where
a lot of people don't, they're scared to start. Because they don't want to fail, and that's the beauty of making is that cavalier lifestyle of fuck it, let's go.
Yeah,
I want this thing to exist, so I'm going all the way in, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to commit myself, my time, my energy, my effort to make this thing a reality. And if something happens in the process, it's okay.
Yep,
you break a few.
I often say that to my art students, and I've said it to other people in the podcast, that the difference between like a wizened, you know, artist that's been around for a long time that does their work and they're really good is the fact that they're not afraid to mess up because they've had past successes and they know it's there. You know, it's like, yeah, it's going to happen, but it can't, you can't hesitate to start. You just got to start. And like, you'll mess up. Like, it's okay to mess up. It's all part of the process.
Great to mess up. Yeah, you're going to learn so much faster the more you fail.
Right. And the people who have been doing it for years just jump right in and they are good at it because they know they might mess up, but they're not afraid to try.
Exactly.
I think that's a huge part of like, of being a creator is that you just have to go through those mess ups to get to that point where you're not afraid anymore.
I think that's the part that, if there was one thing as a creator, as a maker, that I could convey to people the most, it's don't be afraid, just do it.
Right.
You're going to break this thing at some point.
Right.
If you carve, all you're doing is taking things off. You can't put them back. You're taking things off. And if you take a little too much off, that's fine. It's just a little too thin now.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. And like Jimmy says, if it looks straight, it is straight.
Yeah.
don't overthink it. Just let it be exactly what it is. And if it turns into something that you don't end up selling, but you learn from it, great. It was a huge success.
Yep.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's I tell my wife the same thing, and then she's like, well, it doesn't look straight. I go, well, it's done, so.
Well, I'm done looking at it. So it
has worked as long as I want to on this now, so exactly. Moving on.
Look straight to me.
It works. Oh, it's good like enough. We say in the trades, in construction, it looks good for my house.
Yeah.
right.
Looks good for my house.
All right, awesome. Well, let's wrap it up with some recommendations for the listeners. So, Glenn, do you have something you want to recommend?
I'm terrible at this. I'm not even a top 10 guy. Like, I don't have a favorite anything. If I'm going to recommend anything to anyone, it's challenge yourself every day and be afraid and do it afraid, and then you'll stop being afraid. And then when you are afraid, you'll do it anyway, because you'll ultimately accomplish what you do. We can't exist comfortable and safe, and expect to grow. Being uncomfortable, being challenged, pushes us to a place where we can grow. Mm. Otherwise, you're stagnant. You're sitting on the couch watching football every night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Challenge yourself. Pick a rule and follow it. Pick a rule and follow it. Yeah.
I like that. Sweet. Right on. All right. Dev, you got something?
I was watching Matt Harris. His videos recently, he's got good stuff, and he's just a likable guy. We know him from Maker Camp, and he's a Maryland dude. So his YouTube channel is Matthew Harris Studio. And he's been putting stuff out, and he's doing demos with Chris Cash. Where is he? In Western Maryland? He's doing something with him. They're both going on. Oh, they're also going to make the Hammerin' up there.
Yeah, they're doing the Group Forge.
The Group Forge. That's
yeah,
right.
Matt Harris is a badass.
Yeah, they're gonna do some sculpture. But yeah, great guy, really nice, really friendly. Local, real close to us, so that's cool. But he's got some cool videos on his channel. It's still a small-ish channel, but I mean, it, you know,
that's unfortunate because he's incredibly talented as a
sculptor. I don't know how much time he wants to put in. You know, he's busy, and how much time he does. I mean, I feel like he needs like a nephew or something who can just shoot all the time for free and just like put up a shitload of content because he's so good. And he's got such a, just to have the person and where they're at interesting. Like, he's a great guy, good on camera, and his shop is awesome. Those are two huge hurdles.
Yeah.
So he's got that. So his content should be good, but I mean the stuff he's putting out is very good. So
nice.
It's good when you wish there was more. That's how you know, like, oh, okay, this is good stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, right on. All right, my recommendation is another tool guy, woodworker, tool maker. It's Chris from Third Coast Craftsman, and he has put together with a former guy who worked with Suzanne saws in Japan. They've come up with their company Temple Tools, and so they have these beautiful saws and of all different sorts. So really, really nice. And he's been doing some cool like posts about it on Instagram, and obviously his channel on YouTube is awesome. And he and I have been kind of like talking back and forth through social media a little bit more often now. But I picked up one of his saws at Maker Camp, and it's great. I mean, it's not a million times better than, you know, any other Japanese pool saw. They're all kind of made out of the same thing, and they're designed to be like good tools, but you know, you don't really sharpen them. You just use them, and then, you know, that's why they only cost $40 or something. But it's a cool tool, and it has like a good look to it because he's, you know, the traditional Japanese pool saw has the like reed wrapped handle the whole way or whatever that material is. Mm-hmm. And his have like black walnut handles with just smaller sections of the wrapping on it. So it just has a nice little look to it too. Mm-hmm. So
they're sexy.
Yeah, they're nice. So yeah, you can check Chris out on his YouTube channel, Third Coast Craftsman, and you can also check him out under that name on Instagram, but also Temple Tools on Instagram. So good stuff.
There you go. Well, I'll amend mine and let's go ahead and double down and kick our friend Chris Cash in the nuts and have him double down on his Empire of Dirt philosophy. Like, let's get that thing going. Chris Cash, dude. Let's do it.
Yeah.
He had an idea. And it's kind of hanging out in the ether there, dude. Like, come on, where you at?
I know, like, I've talked to Chris about Empire Dirt a couple times, and like, he has like such an amazing perspective on what he wants it to be, and it's such an awesome idea, and like, the idea is there. It just needs like some push behind it, and not obviously Chris is not a lazy dude. He's like every day working hard, all you know. So it's not like, yeah, it's not like he's sitting around not doing anything. It's just another idea. It's another thing, you know, for on top of what he already does. Like, you know, same thing. I wish him luck. I mean, Empire Dirt is awesome. I think, you know, he's talked to us about like once it gets up and going to put some stuff on there, you know, like it's just that like local place that everyone can come and sell their stuff and see like-minded
people. It's a great idea, and it needs to happen. It's been hanging out in the ether for what, almost 2 years now, Chris? Yeah, come on, dude. I'm calling him out. I love me some Chris Cash. Fucking make it happen, dude.
Nice.
If I had to hear you, I'm not fucking listening to this podcast. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he don't listen to the podcast. Fuck you guys.
We got him on for an hour. That was as much as he'll ever listen to the Art of Craftsmanship.
Nice. All right, man. Well, Glenn, it's been a blast, man. Thank you so much for joining us. You guys can find Glenn on Instagram at Howling Winds Axe and Tool. Glenn, do you have any other, you do anything other than your social media stuff?
No, that's it. It's okay. Howling Winds Axe and Tool on Instagram. Glenn Haworth on Facebook.
Nice.
I don't do the whole multi-platform thing. It's annoying. Yeah. And I barely have time to post on Instagram as it is.
So. Yeah, I do the same thing. I mostly do Instagram, and then I just cross post to Facebook only because it does it automatically. So it's like, perfect.
It's easy. Yeah. I tried the YouTube Shorts thing. I've got a YouTube page, and I think it's the same thing. It's Howling Winds Axe and Tool. I don't pay enough attention to it, and honestly, I've really been trying to put some effort into that. But again, it's like if I can't record it on my phone, I get annoyed and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
If I had a Devin,
we all want
I would be in a different position, right? Where I'm having to stop work, reposition my camera.
Yeah.
You know, do all of that. It's cool. I like doing it from time to time. I did it a lot more like last year. Now lately it's just been hold the thing. You can see it in my hand. Look what I did. Sorry. I swear I'm going to put more effort into it. I broke all of my arms that held my cameras where I needed them. I work in a garage over and over again. So here's the deal. So I have this tensioned Manfrotto pole, right? It was meant as a background stand. Mm-hmm. In my past life, I was a professional photographer. And so I've got all this extra gear. And so I would use this Manfrotto auto pole as my vertical camera mount. And then I had another kind of boom arm that would hang off of that with a magnet. My phone sits on that with a magnet. And I could articulate that wherever I needed to, next to the grinder. Then I had a mast next to my vise. Mm-hmm. And I could kind of move it and articulate it wherever I wanted. And I just kept closing the goddamn garage door onto the arm. And I broke it like 3 times. And I was like, you know, fuck it. And I got to build a new thing. But I kind of fabric-cobbled something together that sort of works. But I got to put some more effort into that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. That's one of the things, you know, when I'm have to put effort into doing whatever it is on my own. Like the reason why I don't do a ton of reels or shorts is because, you know, we're used to like the long form stuff and I'm used to having a Devin around to do long form stuff. So it was like, once I realized a little bit of the technique is just like, all right, I had the tripod, it's set up, the camera's on it, whatever I'm doing. If it's, you know, if I'm forging something, I'll get like, you know, 20-second shots of each time I'm doing a new thing, you know, so I put together 10, 11, 12, 20-second shots, and I'm only going to use 3 seconds out of each of those shots, but it's a thing. It's not like, I'm not just out there in the flow state working. I'm in the mindset of I'm creating content while working.
Right.
And it's a different mindset. So
it's a different brain. And especially when you need to get yourself into a flow state, it can be disruptive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it goes back to the philosophy of blacksmithing. If you can't hold it, you can't hit it. And if you can't stabilize the camera, you can't get the shot. So where the fuck do you put a phone?
Right. Yeah.
You need some place to hang the damn thing or stick it to something. And magnets are the thing, guys. Like, get a magnet on the back of your phone and just stick it to stuff. There's plenty of metal in your shop.
Oh, yeah.
Magnets are the way to go.
That's true. You got the what's the green, what's the frog thing, Dust?
Yeah, frog pod.
Those are kind
of
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because it's got the three legs, so it can wrap around stuff and stick to stuff weird and hold stuff. And yeah, it's pretty sweet. Nice. All right. Well, check out Glenn's stuff if you haven't already. He's killing it on Instagram. Like, lots of followers, lots of views. I love it. You know, and it's awesome content. It's fun. It's very like raw and real. And I feel like every time you're talking, it's just you. And you know, I could tell it was. It's not like you're not putting stuff on, but it's real content. I love it.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man. And you guys can check out the new video we just put up on YouTube, the new rare, the Great Divider restoration, of the Mechanical Axe. It's fun. And then you can follow me on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can follow Devin at The Art of Camera Guy, see what's happening behind the scenes. And then if you guys want to support us further, you can always head over to patreon.com/The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can support us there. And like I always say, everything that we make from Patreon goes 100% back into the channel. We just like, when we need something, we go to Patreon, we cash it out, and we buy it with that. And so all that support is helping to put content back out there for the people who watch it. So we appreciate that.
Yep.
All right. Devin, always a pleasure.
Hi, brother.
Glenn, it was awesome, man. So much fun talking to you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It was it was my pleasure as well. Thank you.
Thanks, awesome. Glenn. All right, everybody. Thank you guys for listening. And we will talk to you next time.
Access big savings every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more, up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.